Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are throwing out the old playbooks and rethinking the future of customer experience, customer success, and customer relationships. And I'm really excited to introduce you to today's guest, Emma. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So longtime listeners will know we start with a first question that we ask every time. Our goal is to really dig into the controversies of the day. So Emma, what is your hot take?
My hot take is that customer experience is a team sport. That shouldn't be mind-blowing to anyone, right? It's not just one team, one office, one function. It's the entire company that should be focused on customer experience and making sure that each touch point that our customers take with us is delightful, is valuable, is seamless. And the biggest part of the hot take is that, and now this is something that I think a lot of B2B companies hopefully are moving to, and I've seen it lately, is that your sales team should be part of that customer experience and not just end at sales, but that should be actually incentivized to make sure that the end-to-end journey through renewal and beyond for every customer is up to par to the overall customer experience. And so a lot of folks put incentives at the front end, like net new ACV, how much are you selling, upsell, add-on, but less so about renewal, retention, downsell. And so my hot take is that they should be actually incentivized to provide that experience, even there if there is a customer success management team, if there's a tech support post-sale, like we're all one team, we should focus on the customer end-to-end.
I think sometimes we get really wrapped up in what I'll call like the proper name customer experience, like capital C, capital E. And we forget that there is a lowercase c and a lowercase e in customer experience. And that's the actual experience your customers are having, right? I had this conversation with someone recently. I was like, well, customer experience. And I was talking about just the way you make your customers feel and what value they're getting. But in his mind, he was thinking, oh, yeah, like the survey team and the call center team and the people who have customer experience in their job title. And too often we forget that it doesn't matter what your job title says. If the customer's not coming back, the company's not going to make it.
Absolutely. And like it's also for the customer, we're one company. Right. It's not like, oh, it's the support team. Oh, it's the marketing team. Oh, it's my sales team. Right. We're one company. They don't care where it comes from. So like a lot of my work is actually focused on getting the back office employees, folks in legal and finance, like to understand how they impact the customer experience. Because it's huge. They do the contracting. Like they do all of a lot of times the billing for customers. Like in their head, a lot of times don't have that forefront. Right. They're like, oh, our customers are our employees. Oh, in reality, you actually touch the customer experience in a very meaningful way. So every team in the company does, and making sure that they understand their impact so that they could wow the customer at each moment that matters and like have that wow from back office to front office, from the CEO to the front line is huge.
Isn't it funny, too, that like the fact that a hot take has to be that everyone who works in a business has to care about the customer, but it is a hot take because I've had this conversation with people in all roles. Well, I just work in HR, so I'm not customer facing. But in reality, you are either revenue generating or revenue responding, or you don't have a job. Like that is the purpose of our businesses, is to do some kind of revenue activity. Even our nonprofits who aren't necessarily like, oh, we're here to make money, right? You're either responding to fundraising coming in or you're responding to fundraising going out. So what have you seen when you're working with groups, when you're working with organizations? Like, how do you get that spark to go off for them to say, oh, I am a customer connected role?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like a lot of times we start with the dollar signs, right? Like I wish we were in a world where customer experience would just stand on its own and be like, that's great for business. Like this is mission critical. Right. We're building towards that world, but we're not there yet. And so always we focus on what is the ROI and like the numbers that matter for each group. And the good news of customer experience, to like your point, is, I mean, that's the whole point of your company there, is to serve the customer, right? Like why else, like who's going to buy your product or your service, like if you're not serving the customer, is that it touches the big flywheel of financial metrics. Like it touches ARR and net new ACV growth, right? How our existing customers grow, how they refer others and word of mouth, and how much money comes in from those word of mouth and referrals, like and new customers, cost to serve, like happier customers in general, like need less, right? They're happy, they're like doing well, right? So they call less to the support center or they ask less of customer success managers. Cost to acquire kind of touch, you know, into the word of mouth, like, is lower. Like, your sales and marketing costs are lower if your brand speaks for itself and it's customer centric. And so there's just so many financial metrics, which is great, right, that you could put at the forefront at any finance or legal or customer success or sales teams, and tell them, like, here's, like, if we improve customer experience by XYZ initiative that you actually you should own because it's part of your business, we can up by X million dollars, right, our net new revenue, or like, or our drop down our cost to serve costs, or improve our renewal rates, right? And so usually money speaks loudest.
Yeah.
And when you tie that, and I think a lot of customer experience strategy teams, that's where they fail a lot of times. It's really focused on the insight. Like, oh, we're listening. We know what they're saying, right? But less so on the action, less so on what that actually means for the business, because it's harder. Like, you have to get operational financial metrics to tie it. And I've advised so many in my, you know, long career in customer experience. And that's the number one fail point, is like, we can bring customer experience to tie to ROI, which is actually pretty easy. Like, it just touches so many things, but you need to have the data and the time to do it and the focus to do it. And if you do, like, they really do listen, right? Because if I say, like, if we, you know, improve tech support with agentic AI and spend, like, you know, $50K on a new product of AI, and we're going to bring like $5 million back, it's a no-brainer. Like, why shouldn't we do it? Versus like, oh, tech support is not great, we should improve it, which is a lot weaker of a statement.
Yeah, I think that everything you're saying is correct. The thing that I'm seeing people struggle with is maybe twofold, and maybe this is my hot take, that some people don't know how to connect themselves to the financial metrics, or don't want to. And I'll talk about the don't want to's first. I've seen a couple of people who are anecdotally enjoying the ambiguity of their role. When there's a win and the customer renews, it's because they did great work on their onboarding. And they did, you know, great work keeping up with the customer. And they built a relationship and they identified a champion and built that connection. But when the customer doesn't renew, well, that's sales fault. They sold something bad, or product didn't deliver. Or so there's almost... a couple of people that I've experienced anecdotally that almost enjoy the ambiguity of not having to be accountable to a number.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. What you measure gets managed, right? It gets looked at. And so and that's, like, I've seen a lot of people not even put, like, CX metrics at the forefront. For me, like, if you care about the customer experience, you shouldn't just look at revenue metrics. Like, you should look at leading indicators, like, say, NPS or whatever other metric. I'm metric agnostic, they're all correlated. But a lot of companies, or like CX teams, don't even put that as a KPI up front, because then you have to measure it. Why are we not improving it? What's happening? Right?
Right.
And so I think that only happens if you're not, like, A, focused on the right things, right? And being able to isolate the impact of your team and of customer experience on the financial outcome. And so I just wrote an article on how to build a category defining customer experience strategy team. And a lot of times I focus on, like, actually driving and, like, figuring out and quantifying those financial metrics, and then understanding the impact that your team has on those and isolating it. Because then to my initial point, it's a team sport, right? So yeah, sales impacts it, you impact it, others impact it. But you should get the wins together, and then you should have the losses together as well, right? Another thing around that is, especially in B2B, and I've worked a lot in B2C and B2B, but lately a lot in B2B, there's some initiatives and, like, improvements in customer experience that takes 3 years, right? So you should be ready to be like, hey guys, like, we're going to be in the red for 3 years, but we're doing the right things. And then the customer is going to feel the impact maybe in 3.5 years, right, after you release the improvements. And so you should be able to own that and be like, it's not going to happen overnight, right? So you'll need to have some quick wins in between, because these long-term initiatives take so long. Because, like, B2B, it's like, improve your licensing, improve your contract negotiations, improve all those things. Like, it takes forever, right? It takes across functional teams. And so I've seen teams, like, really focus, oh my God, quick wins. Like, we're going to fix this next year. We're going to drive our NPS by 10 points. It's going to be amazing. And it hardly ever works, because you need time to invest in the right things.
Yeah. As a leader too, like, your comment about sometimes these initiatives can take years. I consulted on a project for an enterprise company a couple of years ago, and they were rolling out this new, they were trying to be more customer centric, right, in their sales approach. And they were rolling out this new initiative, this new system to do that. And the VPs were all excited about it because it was the flavor of the month. The managers were less excited about it because they had to deal with the individual contributors and the change management aspects. And the individual contributors were just totally apathetic. And one of them said something to the effect of like, I'm just going to ignore this initiative because if I ignore it long enough, it'll just go away and we'll have a new one. And I was like, no, no, this is here to stay. And then unfortunately, 6 months later, he was right. The initiative went away and they started some new one. So I think you have to not only be willing to take it on the chin a little bit and have, you know, be in the red for a while, you have to kind of stick to your word, because if you're constantly whiplashing with initiatives, then your team's never going to believe you when you try to do something new or drive change in this way.
Exactly. Like, really focus on like what's short term, what's long term. And sometimes like making a good CX decision in the short term can actually damage a little bit of your financial results, right? And you have to be upfront about that, right? And say like, hey, like we're going to change XYZ and there's going to be a dip, but then in the next 3 years, we're going to see this increase. But you have to be able to quantify that and make the business comfortable that way versus the opposite, right? And you could pilot a lot of things, but absolutely. Like, I think there should be long-term wins that you focus on and in between some quick wins so that your brand and credibility get built up.
So thinking about like the teams that you've worked with, if I'm a leader, I want to start moving towards a more team sport approach when it comes to customer experience as a holistic approach to our customers. What is the first thing I have to get going in order to make that successful?
Yeah, if you're starting up front, I think what I always focus on are like, what are my kind of quick wins? How can I prove value quickly, right? So then I could get the resources to build my team. And then in the same time, what is my long-term strategy of customer experience? I've seen a lot of wins around starting first with like, well, do we have a listening program, right? Like, are we actually listening in the right moments that matter, right? Because a lot of times we have one survey, we like don't have any other signals, and surveys are not the end all. Like, you know, 10% of folks take a survey, the rest don't. And so what are the other signals that we can listen to from, you know, your chats, your support calls, your sales calls, your, you know, all kinds of like your social media feedback. There's just so many different signals. Like understanding what is really the landscape of listening and where you could have the most impact. What are your blind spots and where are we not performing great? I think one of the first steps that I always do when I build a team is create a customer journey map and a customer, specifically customer experience journey map. So like, what are the big moments that matter for our customers? They have so many touch points with us. Not every single touch point is equal. Like, what are the like 10 to 15 like pops, right? Like, what are the things that really matter? Maybe in their purchase experience, their first touch with our website, the engagement with our sales team, the implementation of the product, the use and like adoption of it, then the renewal, right? So what are those like 10 points that we really care about? And do we know how we're performing them? A, if we know how we are, do we know if it's good, if it's bad, if it's red, and, you know, if it's great, we don't have to touch it. And then that really informs you around like where you have to build listening posts, where you have to take action, and where the biggest bang for your buck is. And it takes, you know, it doesn't take that much time. It takes like interviews with customers, it takes interviews with internal SMEs. It maybe takes, you know, kind of like a survey or two, right? To really map out that kind of journey that they have with us and what matters. Because a lot of teams are like always to your point, like, where do I start? There's just so much, right? And it's like, well, your customers will tell you.
Yeah, my background is in customer research, right? And doing all of that work to help inform those journey maps. So we do a lot of that discussion and customer discovery. And one thing that we see people do completely wrong is they say, we are going to track the signals. And then they start to vacuum up every possible signal that could possibly be tracked. And they try to do it all. And what they're realizing is that 90% of that is garbage noise that you don't need to be listening to. But you have to find the 10 signals that are specific to your business, to your customers. And it's not going to be the same as someone else's business and someone else's customers. So it's not as simple as saying, oh, we're going to do NPS and that will tell us everything we need to know. It could be 25 variations of NPS or a survey or whatever, and one of them are going to be right for you and for your business. So it's about aggregating, figuring out what you can track, and then curating it down to what you should.
For sure. And I think NPS is great in the way to tell you, like, where, what are the key challenges and key bright spots that our customers have, but it's not as actionable, right? It's so high level, like up there, anything in their mind. Like, to your point afterwards, is when you build that journey map and understanding, it's like, look, what specific moments do really matter and like really need to take action? And I usually start with one or two, right? Like, you, because you need to build those quick wins and value. You start listening, then you start taking action. Like, for me, insights without action are just noise. Like, I don't ever KPI my team on how many reports you did, how many research projects you did, how many interviews. I don't care. Like, what I care about is, like, how many actions did the business take and how did that move the needle? That's what I KPI on. And so...
And avoiding vanity KPIs. Like, I was just... This is a unrelated to this conversation tangent, but like, I'm in a podcast group, right? You have a podcast, you are in groups where people talk about it, and people are like, oh, you know, I'm getting X number of listeners, that's so exciting, but they're not saying, okay, X number of those listeners are actually engaging with me and like celebrating my content. So they've created vanity metrics of how many people subscribe to their podcast, and that's all they're giving value to,
right?
Rather than how much community are they building. So there's different things that you can track that can change how you quantify success. And you have to connect it to, you know, the business. Like, you might get 100 interviews with clients, but if it doesn't turn anything of value, then why track it at all?
100%. So you should try. And I think that's scary for folks. Like, we talked a little bit about it at the beginning. Like, you should, you know, if we're improving, say, the purchase experience, then we should track, like, that new ACV as, like, a, you know, lagging metric. Maybe you could track the customer experience at that touch point as your leading indicator, but you shouldn't stop there, right? And I think that leap to the business KPI is what a lot of folks struggle with, like, one, to quantify, two, to commit to as well. But with CX, the good news is in the beginning you start, right? So you're not committing to anything in the beginning. You're just like, hey, then we're going to improve this, and we're, you know, let's actually see what the baseline is and like how much like improvement we're going to make. And then like in year two or three, you can commit to some kind of target. But that is critical to actually have the right KPIs, because no one's going to care, like, oh, you, even if like how many interviews you did or like how your CX metric a lot of times in the beginning when you're setting up the program moves, because that's a new metric. I care about like, how are you helping my sales team, or how are you helping the purchase experience in that moment, for example.
When you're working with teams, when you're setting up a new team or trying to figure out how do you unsilo and make this truly a team sport, are there any red flags that you see that you're like, oh, this is not going to work unless we fix this?
With how interact with teams specifically?
Yeah, yeah. Or yeah, if you're trying to move it in that direction.
Yeah, there have been so many, right? A few in the beginning stages when you're trying to convince someone that there's... Because the CX strategy team, a lot of times, comes in and calls your baby ugly, right? That's kind of our job, you know? And so no one really wants to hear that the baby's ugly. And then you have leaders who are... Yep. Okay, fine. I'm making this baby. It's not the perfect baby. Let's fix whatever's ugly. And they love the insight because it helps them be successful. Because like, I fixed that. That's going to improve all these things. Other leaders are, oh, there's no problem, right? Like, why should I be doing this? My baby's great. And so that's the first point, right? Of, you just always get different, you know, type of stakeholders that you should be able to influence without authority. And that's kind of the art of customer experience strategy is like, we don't lead the support team. We don't lead, right, the product team, but we should be able to tie in like how that really matters to them. It's really how it makes that stakeholder successful, right? How are we actually making them successful, and like making sure you articulate that when you're sharing the insights of that baby being ugly. So I think that's like the first tripping point with a lot of folks. And then the second tripping point that I see a lot of time is, okay, baby's ugly. We're going to fix it. We're making the solution. And then there's no customer validation of the solution, right? And that's the customer experience strategy team's another great strength, is they can help with that. Like, right, we have the voice of the customer under us. So we can understand like, okay, you have five different concepts, or like one concept. Like, is COPS actually solving the problem, or is it just something that you made as a band-aid? We can check that with customers. We can do focus groups. Like, we can like do concept validation, right? And so That's the other part is like, okay, let's fix it. Someone takes the action. Maybe it's not the right action, but the voice of the customer needs to be embedded in that design of that action and actually help co-design with customers, do like, workshops around that to make sure that we're solving the right thing.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said in there. It feels like with so many things in business, being self-aware and being willing to be wrong are two key factors that we have that lead to success, right? You have to be aware that maybe your baby isn't as pretty as you think it is and be willing to do what it takes to move in that direction, right? And if someone once told me that there's really only three types of companies: companies that are product focused, companies that are operations focused, and companies that are customer focused. And I thought that was so interesting because if they're customer focused, then they've got all the feedback. They've built the product based on what their customers were asking for. But if you're operations focused, you're just trying to be as, efficient as possible. But what if you're product focused? Like, what if you truly love this thing that you've built and you believe that it does everything it needs to do? Like, how do you move people to be more customer focused, or should you even try if you're not, if that's not your primary mode of operation?
Well, I think it's interesting a comment around like being product focused versus customer focused, because at the end of the day, you're selling that product to the customer. So like you automatically should be customer focused, which although a lot of times is not the case. And then there's this thing that in product that I see a lot of times where it's really about the incentives and how are you incentivizing your product managers, like your engineers, like your designers, right? Like what is the actual success metric that you put for each product feature? And usually we start with product launch, right? And like that, okay, well, great. Then who's using this product? Like then we launched, but then is it actually like solving the customer need? Then they move to product adoption, like when they evolve a little bit, it's kind of the crawl, walk, run approach. Okay, someone's adopting the product. That's great, right? Like that's kind of almost getting to customer experience. And then like the third level, which usually takes a while and convincing to get to, is kind of the are people liking the product, right? Like, are they actually, they're adopting it because they have to, or they're entrenched, or are they actually like satisfied with it? And there comes this customer experience metrics. And I think that's where, some product teams struggle because they do product launch. And a lot of product managers love launching, like to put in their resume, I launched 20 new features, right? Versus I improved 20 features. Doesn't sound as
It's
sexy.
much sexier to launch
Yeah,
something than
exactly. It's
to
way sexier to
improve
launch,
something.
right? And so, but that really comes to the product leaders, right? That's something that CX strategy also works with product, right? Like when I started the company, is like, are you actually having the right product, kind of scorecard of around each product or feature that you launch? Like, you shouldn't be just launch, it shouldn't be just adoption, it should be all these other experience metrics as well, to make sure that the leaders at the top are holding the PMs down accountable for those. And it's actually a top-down culture in that. Like, yeah, it's a team sport, but it has to come from above. Like, the CEO needs to be bought in customer experience. Like, the senior exec staff needs to be bought in that. And then it trickles down, not just on words and like, yeah, yeah, we love CX. Like, we have a seat at the table. No, like, you need the centerpiece at the table. That's the customer, right? That actually makes the decisions. And you put metrics behind.
Yeah, I love that. What are you working on right now? What's the big project in front of you or the big thing you're trying to tackle and accomplish?
Yeah, we're doing so many things and it's great because I'm a builder, right? So at each company I join, like I actually build the customer experience strategy team from scratch a lot of times. Or there's something somewhere stuck in, like that's another thing with CX that a lot of times gets stuck in, great organizations like marketing or operations or IT, but good stakeholders, not the right, probably decision makers for the end-to-end customer experience. So it's some of the things that I love of where I'm at Samsara is that we're really focused on wowing the customer. There's even like a project WOW that we're running around reimagining the customer experience, which is very exhilarating because a lot of times you come in and you're fixing problems, right? You're fixing the where we're leaking the most first. But our CEO Sanjay is really passionate about, well, how are we wowing? Like we've released several products where you could actually show when you show to the customer, there's a gasp of wow, like a visceral wow. What are the other wows that we're going to bring to the customers across the customer journey? Not just in product, but in their first interaction with us, in their renewal experience, in their product adoption, like in their like interaction with customer success, in their how they pay their bills. And I love that, right? That there's this focus on reimagining and bringing something that's good to a wow versus just fixing. We call it, you know, bring the wow and then fix the ow. And so it's kind of two-pronged approach, which is very exhilarating because a lot of times we get, you know, always focused on like kind of the issues and the immediate things that we need to fix. So we're really working on kind of how do we reimagine the overall customer experience at the same time with like kind of fixing some of those leaky faucets.
Very cool. And I think it's, I wrote down that how are we wowing phrase because I think everybody needs to have a ready answer for that. Like, how are we wowing our customers in this interaction?
Right.
What is going to make them sit up straighter and say, wow, that was a really great experience? I mentioned before our call that I just came back from Florida and we were at Disney World. And I think they do a great job at from like the very top to the very bottom. We had someone whose job it was to sweep up trash, stop by and ask us and welcome us to the parks and say, oh, where are you from? Oh, we're from Iowa. Oh, that's a long flight. And her job is to clean up trash around the tables. And yet she took a moment to just like ask us how we were doing and if we were having a great day. It was a wonderful conversation. And, you know, it's something that I'm going to think about because she could have very easily just ignored us and cleaned up her trash. But instead, she smiled and asked us how our day was going.
Yeah. I mean, I think even the smallest attractions can be a wow, right? And it's usually what you remember. Like, that's why I think luxury hotels, for example, do a phenomenal job with that, where like even the Ritz, for example, has like $2,000 each year for each of their employees to go above and beyond the extra mile for a customer, however you want to spend it, right? And so it's like that person at the front door that knows your name, knows you're coming, like knows what your preferences are and what you did in the last day, knows your kids' birthdays because you celebrated some at the hotel, but then like can delight you with something in the moment, right? Because that they are empowered to do so. I think it's about that empowerment a lot of times, right? Because I think empathy without empowerment is just draining, right? A lot of times we're like,
you have to be empathetic.
You have to be on the call, right? With customer support, we have to understand the customer's problem, but that you're not empowered to solve it. And that's super draining, right? For an employee. And there's that really, there's no recognition there. And so I think that the huge important lesson here for companies is how are you actually empowering your employees to solve those problems in real time?
I agree. I think empowerment and having the culture in which you try to do what it takes to make the customer have that great experience, right? And allowing that and rewarding, and I think you said at the beginning, incentivizing it and creating incentives based on that.
Exactly.
I think that that's a huge thing that companies probably overlook because it seems obvious, right? The best things always do. Like, of course you want to empower your employees to help the customer. But if you don't explicitly say that or create environments or opportunities for them to do that, then how will they ever know where that boundary exists?
And how do you bring that into your values? Here at Samsara, we actually want to, the first value that you see is sample the customer experience. So for everyone, we're really focusing on like from frontline to like, you know, the CEO, how are we sampling the customer experience? Each of us, we have a program around every VP needs to meet with a customer and be on a customer visit, which is, you know, finance, VP, legal, or how do we provide the right insights to folks that are back office to front office to understand the customer experience? How do we do our onboarding that's focused on the customer, focused on the, you know, what we how we serve them and what industries and who they are and what they care about, what their challenges are? So we're actually like part of what we're doing as a team here is like working with our people team to make sure that we're actually accelerating that sample to customer experience and everyone feels that they have a part of it, not just in onboarding, but throughout your entire kind of journey with Samsara. Like at ServiceNow, where I worked in last, we even had each employee needed to have a CX goal each year, in each quarter. So what is, like, you have your business goals with your team, but what is like actually a customer experience goal that you have that you're going to like work towards this year? And like that was for each person. So to your point, like we have to incentivize, we don't just have to talk about it. We have to actually like walk the talk.
Exactly. I'm thinking about all of the incredible people you've worked with, you've known, you listen to, or that you follow. Who else should we be paying attention to? Who is leading the charge on changing the game of customer relationships?
I think we're fortunate. There's so many that currently are focused on customer experience, on customer value. I love what ServiceNow is doing with Bill McDermott. I really is like focused on how do we get to value each step of the way? And it's like how, and really the focus of the company is being hungry and humble, which I love that. And that really serves our customers. I think Samsara and like our CEO Sanjit are really doing a great job of that as well, where part of what we always talk about is the feedback loops we have with customers. Everything that we've ever built here is really coming from our customers. Like, what do you need? We'll build it, right? And so we have customer advisory boards. We have all kinds of listening throughouts. And like what he like really talks about, and it's actually part of our values as well, is like that feedback loop back and forth. And I think it's that's critical when you're building those relationships, like making sure that we're listening and we're like taking action based on that versus just, you know, being a product company or a finance company or an operations company.
And if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more or just have a conversation about how to make customer experience team sport, where can they find you online?
LinkedIn. Like, I'm very active. I have a website. You can find me there, but I'm really active on LinkedIn. I love customer experience thought leadership. I post an article almost every month. Like, I do a lot of podcasts and I always reply to DMs. So LinkedIn is probably going to be the best way.